Cubs fans on cloud nine after a 5-1 homestand against the Rockies and the Dodgers. We're going to talk about this and the upcoming West Coast trip right here, right now on the Setup Man podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome in. What's up, Setup Nation? It's me, Kyle Stanley, and I'm excited to have you here. We're going to be talking all things Chicago Cubs as it was a fantastic first homestand of the year. Make sure you're commenting on this. Make sure you're subscribing. What was your highlight of the 5-1 homestand? We've got a lot of highlights to talk about. We've got a lot of fun things to go over. We've got a few concerns. I do want to apologize ahead of time. I still am dealing with this stupid cough and congestion, and I feel like I'm talking like this, but it obviously you guys probably like, I don't hear any difference, but that's fine. Going to Colorado this last weekend probably didn't help out. That was fun though. Just a little side note, went to Rockies opening day, saw KB hit a home run, of course, broke my own cardinal rule and left early. We left in the bottom of the eighth inning with Rockies up 6-2, and then the Rays got ahead 7-6 in the ninth, and then the Rockies won it on a walk-off, and we weren't there for any of that. None of that. So luckily, it wasn't a Cubs game. Cardinal rule, I will never miss a pitch on a Cubs game. I remember last year we went to the Padres and Cubs game and was with a bunch of friends that aren't baseball fans. We showed up in the second inning, and I was just like dying for the first inning. Like, what's going on? Why can't I be there? I hate this. We're looking for parking. We can't find any. This sucks. I paid for an entire game. You know, all those things. But if you feel that way too, not only drop it in the comments, but subscribe because you're going to feel the same way that I do. Now, one really quick thing before we get into this, I'm extremely excited, guys. We are going to be doing our first live streams of the year on April 10th. It's going to be just me, and I'll be giving away a memorabilia autograph. I'm not telling you which one yet, but make sure you show up. We're going to be giving away that autograph by the end of the game, no matter if the Cubs win or lose. So show up. We're going to really, I mean, like when you talk about a live stream, I see a lot of people doing them out there. We're going to try to take it to the next level. We're going to have some fun. We're going to be doing some giveaways. We're going to be having actual topics that we're going to be focusing in on. I'm going to be giving you some unique perspective from the game as I see it. And I just want to have fun with you guys. Like, just join us, throw it in the comments what you're thinking. Was that a strike? Was that a ball? Let's have fun watching the game together is where I'm coming from on that. And then on Friday, the first game of the Mariners series, Brendan Miller, the pitch doctor from CHGO, is coming in, and he's going to give all of his graphs, all of his perspective about these games. And I believe on Friday, who will we have for that? If it's probably going to be either Imanaga or Wicks, it'll probably be Wicks. So we're going to have some fun watching that one. Brendan is also a huge Nico and Dansby fan. And of course, we'll be giving away another autograph on that game. So make sure you join us. Hit those notifications on the YouTube channel to make sure that you know when we're going live. But just join us. First pitch. Be in the comments. Let's have some fun. We're talking April 1st to April 7th here of 2024. And it was a really, really fun week of baseball. After starting the season in Texas, losing that series, but salvaging the last game, you wanted to see the Cubs take advantage of being at home in April, which is one of the toughest parks to play in and hit in during the April season, which advantage Cubs, right? Like, you should be excited to play at your home stadium when other teams are not. And that's exactly what happened. So Rockies going into this series, honestly, I hate putting this kind of pressure on it being it's April, but we saw how this season was lost in May last year. Again, I don't believe the season was lost in April. I believe it was lost September. I believe it was lost in May because all of the bad decisions and all of the games, the close games that did not go the Cubs' way. Well, with the Rockies coming into town, I put the pressure on myself, on the Cubs, put it out in the universe there. We need a sweep. Like, just fact of the matter, this is the worst team probably in the NL, maybe the second worst team. This has to be a series that you take early on. And good God, Shota Imanaga coming out there game one and looking like the... we didn't sign him as an ace, but he looked like an ace. Like, that was exciting. And I did a breakdown of that in case you missed that video. I talked about how Shota, you know, got away with a few pitches, but pitched through the conditions. If you missed that video, go check it out. Nice little quick 5-minute breakdown. Cubs win 5-0 in Shota's debut. 9 strikeouts, 6 innings. Didn't give up a hit until 2 outs in the 6th inning, which was just super exciting. Then Javier Assad. A lot of people out there just like, oh, I don't know if Assad is going to be a good starter. This guy now has made 19 starts in his career and has a ERA under 3. He's a good starter. It's just a fact, right? You can point to the fact that, oh, well, you know, he's going to be a better bullpen arm. He's going to be a better weapon in the bullpen. I agree with that. But when he makes spot starts like he did on Tuesday, where the Cubs won 12-2, and just from top to bottom, the offense clicked. Javier Assad went out and threw 6 shutout innings. A number 5 starter. Our first 3 starters couldn't make it into the 5th inning. Or couldn't make it past the 5th inning, I should say. Justin Steele, of course, made it into the 5th. I don't want to talk about that anymore, but hopefully we'll see him back quickly. Justin, you're not listening, but if you were, we're wishing you a very healthy and quick recovery. All right, 12-2 win. Off to a great start. And then they're up 8-2 on Wednesday, and all the things fall apart, right? You bring in Yency Almonte, get a nice little quick, clean inning, right? No, he gets a couple walks. There's a base hit. Suddenly his base is loaded. He's not looking so good. Bring in Hector Neris. Hector Neris starts giving up all of these runs. Suddenly it's a tie game. But resilience was the name of the game on Wednesday. You saw this team in May last year and September, close games. Did not go their way. In 2023, this game is probably one that the Cubs lose, but they come back in the bottom of the eighth inning, squeak a run across, Alzolay comes in, closes it down, 9-8 win. You get that sweep. That was the expectation for me, and they met my expectation. A lot of you probably just wanted a series win. I wanted a sweep. All right, off day on Thursday, and then Friday, Dodgers come to town. This is where my expectations changed a bit. I honestly thought the way that this series was going to go, based on how the pitching matchups lined up, I was going to be good with salvaging one game, just being completely honest. Now, I am a realistic, I'm a realistic Cubs fan. I'm making up that name right now. I'm a realistic Cubs fan. And what I mean by that is I'm optimistic, but I'm extremely realistic. Kyle Hendricks did not look good in his first start. Felt like advantage Dodgers in the first game. Especially when you think about that lineup that the Dodgers have, I don't feel comfortable with a pitch-to-contact type of pitcher like Kyle Hendricks going against that lineup. But hey, Hendricks, after a first inning where really he should have got out unscathed, didn't have a bad inning until the 5th and kept the Cubs in the game. That's what you need from your 5th starter. Let's be honest, Kyle Hendricks is the 5th starter. Once Tyone and Steele are back, it's going Steele, Tyone, Imanaga, Wicks, then Hendricks. As a 5th starter, you just want your team in the game. And that's what Kyle Hendricks did. Sure, things got rough in the 5th inning. A few runs come across. Suddenly it's 6-5. But add on a few more runs and the Cubs salvage this one. What I loved about this game too, it was the Michael Busch revenge game. It ended up being the Michael Busch revenge series, if we're being completely honest. But this game, he had his first major league or his first Cubs home run against his former team, and diving play to save the game. Alzolay gets the save. Had that ball gotten through Outman's bat, you got a tie game, and you never know how it's going to go, especially with the way that the bullpen had to work for that one. Another big shining moment of that game was Drew Smyly just continues to do good work against the Dodgers. Nearly had a perfect game last year at Wrigley Field, and he came in a really tough spot, stranded the tying run, and really left not giving up any runs. But then, of course, there was a base hit that scored 2 of his inherited runners. Turns out it was Merriweather was the one that gave up the hit, and Merriweather ended up going on the DL the next day. So you look at it, and honestly, I say, even though the bottom line says 2 2/3, 2 runs, I look at that as that was the saving grace relief appearance of that game. Cubs win 9-7. Moving on to the next day, another one that I just said, yeah, it felt like it was going to be a loss. And it ended up being that way. Yamamoto. And, you know, I had some fun with you guys. A lot of you, especially not Cubs fans, were just like, oh, you know, this guy's saying that Yamamoto is a bust. You know what? We have some fun here. We like to go extreme. We like to say that, hey, just because he had one bad inning, is Imanaga better? Well, you know what? We have no idea where this season's going to go, but Yamamoto was solid. He was really solid. I want to say he's got now 10 scoreless innings consecutive since that one bad outing in Korea against San Diego. You know what, though? The Cubs missed some opportunities in that game. They could have gotten some early leads, end up losing that one 4-1. And you feel pretty good going into Sunday, if you're being completely honest, because the Cubs come to that game with Shota Imanaga on the mound, and the Dodgers have Gavin Stone, who's most likely, if you're going to be honest, he's the guy out of the five starters that they have that you want to see the most. And Cubs took advantage. Michael Busch, once again, revenge series. He has that bases clearing double in the first inning, off to a good start. Imanaga looking completely dominant. At one point, he had a 6-pitch inning and then a 4-pitch inning. He was on his way to having probably a 7, maybe even 8 inning masterful start. Of course, the rain comes down. That sucks. But the fact of the matter is an 8-1 win, and Daniel Palencia had a huge, huge outing in this one to save the bullpen. If you go into a 9-game road trip on the West Coast with a depleted bullpen on a travel day, with no off day and a delayed travel day at that because of all the rain, you don't feel good about the bullpen. But Palencia went in there, 3 innings, 1 earned run. I mean, what else can you ask for when you need to have a full bullpen, a healthy bullpen going into a crazy, crazy? I mean, the West Coast trips are tough. It is not easy. The time change, the late games, your body is still in this mode of like, oh my gosh, it feels like we're starting this game at midnight. It's not easy. And so for that reason, you feel really good about where the bullpen is at. For me, when it comes down to this 5-1 homestand, the biggest thing, the biggest bright spot in all of this is that you are going into, again, this is one of the toughest Aprils that any team has got. You have a 6-3 record going into now still the thick of it when you come out on the other side of this 9-game road trip. If the Cubs can go 5-4 or even 4-5 on this road trip, you're still in a really good position. And that's what's exciting. So you got the Dodgers, you got the Mariners, and you got the defending NL champs in the Diamondbacks. Now, some of the things that worry me a bit, and I want to talk about the bullpen, but again, I feel like there's 3 camps of fandom. There's the 2 extremes, which a lot of people are, extreme pessimist or extreme optimist, right? Kyle Hendricks is not only going to be good, he's going to be competing for a Cy Young like he did in 2016. There's the optimist. The pessimist, I don't care that Hector Neris had a 171 ERA last year because he dropped 2 miles an hour on his fastball. The guy's going to suck, right? And then there's kind of like the middle grounds, which is where, again, I'm the realist. The realist is like, I'm not ready to make judgment calls in April. We're freaking 9 games into the season. Let's just pump the brakes for a second. But there's still worries. There's still some worries. And they come really in 4 players here. Number 1, Julian Merriweather. That sucked. Julian Merriweather hits the DL with a shoulder strain that is not going to be 15 days. We don't know what that is, but when you look at Justin Steele's hamstring strain, that's going to be at least a month. And that has nothing to do with his arm. A shoulder strain, luckily it happens in April, right? Give him a month, give him a month and a half, let him slowly come back. This bullpen has more depth than it did last year, but that's a huge blow to a guy that was closing games, was a incredible 8th inning, 7th inning setup guy. Yes, that was intentional. I'm going to say setup guy, setup man as often as I can, just telling you. But Merriweather is a huge blow and going to be deeply missed on this team right now, especially when you look at the 3 guys that are putting up the most question marks, at least on Cubs Twitter they are, and that is Yency Almonte, Jose Cuas, and Hector Neris. So let's start with Almonte. And again, everything is such a small sample size. All of you out there calling Almonte and Cuas and Neris bums or losers or trade them away, That was Merriweather last year. In his first outing, he gave up 5 runs, I think, in like 2/3 of an inning. And then a couple days later, he gave up another 2 runs. And everyone's like, I'm done with the Merriweather train. This experiment isn't working. Well, what if Jed, which by the way is not how front offices or managers or teams work. They don't have short leashes like that in April. There has to be time that is given to figure out the kinks. And so had we done that with Merriweather last year, this bullpen goes from average to bad because you've lost a guy that really carried you all the way through September. So let's start with Grace. But let's also look at some of the numbers here. So Yency Almonte has had now 6 outings. He's given up runs, earned runs in 2 of those 6. One was the first outing of the year where he hung a slider, tie game. I believe Adolis Garcia was the one that hit the home run. Who, by the way, like I think anyone can give up a home run to Adolis Garcia, but he did hang a slider. And then you had the one really bad outing against the Rockies that kind of snowballed and the Cubs almost lost that game. But I mean, honestly, that was, I think when he came in, it was 8-3, something like that. That's the kind of game that as a reliever, when you're not in high leverage situations and you're used to being in high leverage situations, you see it all the time, right? Close. Their ERA in non-save situations is like 9. And then they come in and they have a 1.1 ERA in save situations. There's just something mental about playing the worst team in the NL and being up 8-3 in the 8th inning. I don't like using that one as a gauge is what I'm saying. So aside from that, you know, he gave up a run the other day against the Dodgers, but that was with 2 outs, nobody on, and then a 2-out error by Miles Mastroboni, and then a little bloop hit off the bat of Miguel Rojas. Aside from that, I don't have enough information to be like, yeah, this guy is, he's a bum, right? No, he just went 1-2-3 the other day against his former team with 2 strikeouts. Now, do I like his control? No, I haven't really seen solid control. He's walked 3 in 4 innings. That's not great. Is his slider super sharp? I mean, when he keeps it low, yeah, but he hangs that thing every once in a while. So there's some concerns there. Jose Kwas. We forget that Jose Kwas was a good pitcher for the Cubs last year. 3.04 ERA. Everyone and their mom. Why are we putting in Jose Kwas? I was actually one of those guys. I said that at one point in September. I was like, why is Jose Kwas coming in right now? It felt like he was not that good. Why? Well, because the numbers will show you that he made things interesting, right? 23 2/3 innings with the Cubs, 14 walks, only 19 strikeouts. He's not Craig Kimbrel coming in and striking out every other batter, but walking every fourth batter. He's coming in and walking every third batter and striking out every third batter, right? It's not dominant enough for you to say, okay, yeah, 3 ERA, that's what it felt like. No, it felt a little bit rockier, but he still got the job done last year. So for that reason, why are we ganging up on Jose Kwas? Well, because he had a bad outing against the Dodgers the other day. But my question is that the guy that should be coming in with 2 runners on in a high leverage situation in the 5th inning? Should Jordan Wicks have even been taken out of that game? You can go down the rabbit hole of like, well, his pitch count. Yeah, but like he had just struck out Freeman. He's got a hot hand. He's got to face now Teoscar Hernandez, who I think had a flyout and a strikeout against him at the moment. But let's assume for a second that Jordan Wicks should be pulled in that situation. Is Jose Kwas the right guy for that moment? A guy who has erratic control, inheriting 2 runners, hasn't pitched in 4 days. I don't know that was a winning formula. So for me, yeah, like you throw into the backstop, you walk the first guy. That's not a good look. But at the same time, Jose Kwas is the guy that I want to come in fresh into an inning or come in with 2 outs, nobody on, or 1 out, nobody on, not 2 outs, 2 on, and the game is on the line. So choice of time to be used, not feeling so hot about that. So again, Kwas, is he off to a great start? No, he's not. He's had 3 outings. He has now pitched in 4 2/3 innings, 5.79 ERA. Okay. But again, small sample size, extremely small sample size. And then Neris, of course, comes in first two outings and we're like, oh, he was just playing us in spring training. And then tries to clean up the mess that Yency Almonte made on April 3rd with the Rockies and could not do it. Just did not get it done. Not only gave up the three inherited runners, but another two runners after that. So give up essentially five runs to tie the game. Not what you want in a guy that you could say, now that Julian Merriweather is down, could be in more closing situations if Alzolay has any sort of, you know, 3 days in a row is pitched, dealing with any nagging injury. That's not a good look. But it is one outing in April, and I'm going to cautiously move forward with let's see what happens. I'm going to be realistic. And I'm going to keep on asking this question until it gets answered, because I don't know anyone that has a good answer for this, aside from the fact that the guy is just still young in his career. But when is Luke Little going to get high leverage situations? This year, Luke Little has pitched in a 11-2 loss, a 12-2 win, was an opener for the 9-8 win. So that's about the only leverage situation that he's been in, because it was to start the game. Killed it. Okay. One strikeout, two ground balls back to him on 14 pitches. And then the last game he pitched was in the loss. We were already down. It was either 4-1 4-0 or 3-0 at the time. When is Luke Little going to be put in a leverage situation? The guy deserves it. That's who I want to see coming in for Jordan Wicks in the fifth inning with two on, when you got Teoscar Hernandez and then Max Muncy coming up behind you. What is it that coaches don't see about him that make them believe that he's not a guy, right? Looking at his stats right now, two walks and four innings, okay? That's not that alarming. Not great. I want to see definitely less walks, more strikeouts. He's only had three strikeouts this year, which is different than last year. He was striking out like every other batter, but he's only allowed one hit in four innings so far. He has not allowed a run in a major league game dating back to September when he got his call up. When is he going to get the chance? Tell me, Setup Nation, are you out there saying the same thing? Like, why aren't we seeing Luke Little in these situations? Especially with Merriweather going down, it's going to happen. It's got to happen. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. Got to see it happen. Now, let's talk about Shota Imanaga. I cannot think of a better way to start your major league career than the way that Shota Imanaga has done. So here's the numbers. So far in two starts, 10 innings pitched. The only reason that isn't a 13 or 14 is because of the rain on the Dodgers game from the other day. 12 strikeouts in 10 innings. By the way, he had 12 strikeouts in 8 innings. And then the last two innings of the Dodgers game, he had 10 pitches total to get 6 outs. No earned runs, 1-0 record. By the way, hate the way that we're still doing wins and losses in Major League Baseball. Shota Imanaga should be the winner of that game. I don't give a flying you-know-what that he didn't go 5 innings. The dude pitched the first 4 innings, got the Cubs into a position of being up, I believe it was 6-0 when the rain delay happened. He's the winner of the game, especially in an era now where going 5 innings is like, oh, cool. Like that 5 is the new, what is 7 is the new 5 or 5 is the new 7, however you want to say that. Like, to me, 5 innings is going 7 innings 6-7 years ago. That's where we're at. There is hardly any pitchers hitting the 100 pitch mark. So Shota Imanaga deserves to be 2-0. That's my rant. I will say this has far exceeded my expectations so far of Shota. We saw in spring training, he had a mid-5 ERA, tons of strikeouts. I'm looking at it right now. In 12 2/3 innings, he had 25 strikeouts and just 3 walks. That's not sustainable. He's not going to strike out 2 guys every single inning. But when we talk about, hey, this is going to be a legitimate 3 or 4 starter, and he's getting paid in such a way that would be a legitimate 3 or 4 starter, don't expect him to be an ace. I'll tell you what, first 10 innings, this guy looks like an ace in the absence of an ace on this team. And that's the hugest thing right now. You wanted Kyle Hendricks to step up. That hasn't happened. Jordan Wicks, you can see he's working through some things. He's going to be there. This is a guy that I don't worry about. Javier Assad comes in. He puts up an ace-like performance, but Shota in back-to-back starts has looked like an ace for the Cubs. Hey, how about the Cubs offense? Let's transition to that for a second. Listen to some of these numbers. In this 5-1 homestand, the Cubs had a total of 235 plate appearances, okay? 235 plate appearances is a good sample size. A 281 batting average and a 375 on base. The team OPS in these six games was the same as Seiya Suzuki at the end of the season last year at 842. Eight home runs, two triples, nine doubles. There was a total in this six-game stretch of 44 runs. You take out the one game that the Cubs had a loss in, one run, right? They lost 4-1 against the Dodgers. That's 43 runs in five games. That is averaging 8.6 runs per game. This offense, after what I would say was a lackluster start to the season, scored three runs in the first game, two runs in the second game, has turned it on. In fact, let's just go ahead and look at that. Since they lost those first two games, the Cubs are now 6-1, and as a team batting .286, .387 on base, .850 OPS, and have, let's see, 38 walks in how many games is that? Seven games. 38 walks in seven games. This feels, I don't want to start throwing this out there, but this feels like, you know, the 2008 Cubs. You remember how much that team just watched pitches. It was the Fukudome effect, right? This team is wearing down pitchers. I remember looking yesterday at Gavin Stone's pitch count. I think it was like the second inning. He was already up to 70 pitches. I could be completely wrong on that, but that's what it felt like. This is an offense that is clicking right now. Is this sustainable? I don't know. But I will tell you, when Christopher Morel, Seiya Suzuki, and Cody Bellinger are hitting on all cylinders, which I wouldn't say is even the case right now. I would say Seiya is having a really solid start. Morel's having a solid start. Cody has to pick things up probably a little bit. He's honestly one of the guys that is having the least impressive starts of the season. But when that lineup is clicking and you have Ian Happ doing his thing, Ian Happ is having an incredible season so far, and he's doing exactly everything that you want out of a leadoff hitter thus far this season. .333 batting average, .442 on base. He's slugging .472, which I'd like to see that a little bit higher. I really want to see Ian get back to those 500 slugging percentage days. .914 OPS. Just missed his first home run the other day. The only thing this offense is not doing so far, which has been incredibly surprising, is stealing bases. That's the only thing that I would like to see a lot more of. Thus far, the Cubs have two stolen bases. Nico Horner last year at this time, I want to say, already had seven stolen bases alone. He doesn't even have a stolen base. That's the biggest surprise at the moment that I would like to see improved, because I don't think that eight runs per game is sustainable unless you're wreaking havoc on the bases. Let me know what you think. Why have the Cubs not been stealing bases? But good Lord, this offense is killing it. Hey, good news. Jameson Taillon made his first rehab start. And no, it did not go well. 2 2/3 innings, gave up four runs. Three of them were earned. He walked one and he struck out four. But guys, I mean, remember when Kyle Hendricks was making his rehab starts last year? He didn't look good. He was giving up grand slams. He was not fooling anyone. I think it was like one of his last rehab starts. He did pretty well, and then they made the move back to the majors. I put zero stock in what Jameson Taillon is doing to a double-A team in the minors on his first rehab start, his first start of the year, given the fact that he didn't have a single spring training start. Now, Jameson Taillon, if he comes back and is serviceable, I'm not talking about second half Jameson Taillon last year, but not first half Jameson Taillon, right? First half, mid fives, ERA. Second half was in the low threes. If he can be a guy that's going five innings, two earned runs for the next month, that suddenly changes the scope of what we're looking at in this rotation. Now Ben Brown potentially goes back, gets more work in AAA, or maybe because Julian Merriweather is now on the IL, maybe Ben Brown stays on the team and now he's a long reliever, or he comes in some leverage situations with that 98, 99 mile an hour fastball. It changes the scope of what this pitching staff can do. So I can't wait for J-Mo to get back out there. He'll probably have another, I would guess, two or three rehab starts. My guess, just to get him up to 80, 90 pitches. He threw 52 this last time. Maybe at best he makes two more, and then he comes up with the club, seeing him at the end of April. We'll see. And now it's time for our Monday morning quarterback, where I look at Craig Counsell from the last week, and I just give my absolute expert opinion on how he did. And of course, I'm being sarcastic when I say that. But, you know, let's just be honest. As fans, we like to do some managing ourselves. And so for that reason, I'm going to do some managing with you. Some good that Craig Counsell has done. How about Nick Madrigal and Christopher Morel's usage at third base? It feels like every time that Christopher Morel has made an error so far, you're like, well, that sucked, but it also didn't make or break the game. And then Nick Madrigal has made some amazing plays that you're like, holy cow, that was clutch. We needed that right then and there. And I think the reason being is that Craig Counsell has been very aware of, hey, we have Kyle Hendricks on the mound. He needs to be able to get some ground balls to get out of some situations. We have Jordan Wicks on the mound that is a rookie, and he's probably going to need some help down there at third base. And then you've got guys like Shota Imanaga, that's a fly ball pitcher, and is probably not going to get many ground balls at third base. Counsell's put all this into the equation along with who's the opponent. Is this going to be a close game? Is this potentially a runaway game on either side? And I've been very impressed thus far that the results have shown that these guys are in the right positions at the right time. And I heard it the other day. I want to say it was on the CHGO podcast. Morel doesn't need to be starting at third base 162 games out of the year. The way that Counsell has shown that he's going to use the DH position, he's going to rotate it, right? He's going to give Cody Bellinger a DH day. He's going to give Ian Happ a DH day. He's going to give Seiya Suzuki a DH day. It feels like, you know, the majority are going to be DHs from different positions every single day. And for that reason, you can have Morel DH 3 days a week, play third base 3 days a week, and be okay. And I like that kind of mix. And so far it's working. Would I also like to see Christopher Morel just take control of third base and just put all of our worries aside, and then Nick Madrigal can be a bat guy or maybe a trade piece? Yeah, I would. I absolutely would. But we get what we can take right now. So good job with the usage there. The lineup consistency. I have loved how consistent this lineup is. Happ, Suzuki, Bellinger, Morel, Swanson, Bush, and then you have, that's six. Then you typically have Nico at seven, unless it's a lefty, then Nico's leading off. And then you have your typically third base at with Madrigal, and then catcher in the ninth spot. So many guys, with the exception of the 2016 team where Joe Maddon just like threw together a million different lineups, so many different guys will tell you in confidence, I don't like not knowing what my position is in the lineup. Just like a guy who typically does not like to go and play a bunch of different positions, the mental preparation for being in different spots in the lineup does not breed success. If I know I am batting leadoff on a daily basis, I'm going to be mentally prepared to bat leadoff. If I am batting third, I'm going to be mentally prepared to bat third. But if I'm batting second one day and then eighth the next, that's a completely different take. That's a completely different set of pitches I'm probably going to get. That's a completely different set of situations that I'm going to be in. I love the consistency. Keep doing that, Craig Counsell. And then how about Drew Smyly? Craig Counsell going to Drew Smyly in game one. I think all of us were like, oh boy, this was a 6-2 game, and now it's 6-5, and Council's bringing Smiley. What are we doing here? Are we just trying to throw away this game? And you know what? It paid off. Drew Smiley was, I don't want to use the word electric, I don't want to use the word dominant, but he was incredibly effective going through that lefty-heavy lineup. Muncy, you've got Freeman, you've got Lux, you've got Otani, you got all these guys that could hurt any lineup or any pitcher that goes out there. And Drew Smiley did a great job. Did he give up 2 runs? Yeah, but it was after he got pulled, and it was because of a base hit that was off of Julian Merriweather, who went on the DL the next day. So coming in 2 2/3 innings, left with no runners scored, ended up having 2 runs score. I thought that was a clutch move. I thought putting him out there again and again each inning after that showed a lot of confidence that I don't think most of us fans had, but Craig Counsell knew something and did a great job with maneuvering Smiley. Now, a couple things that I think Counsell could have done a better job with, and I think this is back-to-back now for Ben Brown. Ben Brown went out and threw 4 shutout innings, had around 60 pitches. Boom. Take him out. We're up 8-2. I don't know what the score was at that point, but it was a big deficit. I want to say it was 8-2. Take him out. Keep the confidence high. I even asked that question on Twitter, got a few responses of like, yeah, just take him out now. And then he sent him out there again. And it was one pitch, a fly ball to left field, looked like Ian Happ lost it in the lights or lost it somewhere. It looked like it probably could have been caught. Should it have been caught? I don't think so, but could it have been caught? I think so. And double, take him out. Once again, it's like, why? He was on such a high. Just let the rookie get out of there on a high. Tell me what you think, though. Should Ben Brown have been taken out in the fourth inning? Should he have been stretched out a little bit more to try to get out of his own jam? I want to know what your take is. And then my last little rant here of the bad was Jordan Wicks being taken out with 2 outs in the fifth inning against the Dodgers. You know, all hell basically broke loose after that with Jose Kwas. You know, he walks the first guy, wild pitch, runner comes in, Max Muncy hits the single. Suddenly, a 0-0 game is now 3-0. I don't look at Jose Kwas and say that was his fault. I look at that decision as, one, Jordan Wicks should not have come out of that game. Number two, Jose Kwas is not the guy you want in that kind of situation. He has not proven that he has the control to go in and have a clean inning, let alone come in and get rid of 2 inherited runners. So my grade on this one is not great for Craig Counsell. But my take on this is beyond Craig Counsell. And it is this mode that we're in baseball of the 100 pitch mark and guys going through 3 times in the lineup. Jordan Wicks had just struck out Freddie Freeman. And then you have a high strikeout guy in Teoscar Hernandez who comes to the plate that already had a strikeout that game, didn't have a hit, was 0-2. And now is the time that you take him out? If you're going to take him out, wouldn't you take him out against Otani and Freeman, not against Teoscar Hernandez? That was very backwards to me. And it's this mode that we're in baseball of like treating all these pitchers as these fragile porcelain dolls. And yes, injuries are higher. And yes, the stats say that the third time through the lineup, guys are getting hit. But also, there's the moment where you need to just feel the game and say, leave him in. Let him develop. If he gets hit, let him take the L. Not a bullpen guy coming in and forcing the L on Jordan Wicks. He was at 100 pitches. That's the only justification I can have on this, is that you're at 100 pitches and you're taken out. But how many pitches was it going to take for him to go one more with Teoscar Hernandez? 5? Maybe at worst 8? Okay, you got 108 pitch game. Why not stretch it out and let him either earn the W or earn the L? And that's where I'm at on that. I really think, especially when it comes to developing these young pitchers, yes, we need to be worried about innings pitched, but more so, we need to be worried about what is this going to do to them mentally if they're taken out of this game right now. You're telling a young pitcher that I don't think you can get the next guy. What does that do to a guy who is looking like he has the stuff to be able to get the W for the day? And by the way, that was a really good moment of Jordan Wicks said after the game that he did not have his changeup and still went out there and threw 4 2/3 scoreless innings against arguably the top maybe one or two lineups in all of baseball. So let's end on the focus of the positive there, and that is Jordan Wicks doing what he did against the Dodgers is extremely exciting. All right, it is time for your dunce cap moment of the week, and it's the bullpen blowing the Rockies' lead. Even though you win that game, you feel like it was a moral loss. Even though, I mean, I'll take the W all day long, right? No matter how they come. I don't care if we were up 8-2 and 1-9-8 or 1-12-2 like we did the day before. A win is a win, but man, that is one of those games that you just look at and you say, this is the worst team in the NL. At least it looks like on paper, they're going to be the worst team in the NL. And you can't hold an 8-2 lead going into, I believe, the seventh inning. In the eighth inning, it was 8-3. That didn't feel good. Now, you know, the justification is it's still early in the season. Craig Counsell is still figuring out which weapons he has for certain situations in the bullpen. But to me, that's more of a mental lapse than it is a, like, that's not the manager. That's all the bullpen right there. That's Yancy Almonte and Hector Neris. Those two guys got to lock that down. So that's your dunce cap of the moment, but got the W anyway. Now, fly the W moment of the week. How about the finishing off of the Dodgers, winning 2 out of 3, beating one of the best teams in baseball, 2 out of 3, this early in the season, going into a 9-game stretch that you are going to be happy with 500 baseball is just, I can't tell you how huge that is. And for me, that's my fly the W moment of the week. Feel good moment of the week. Well, how about the former Dodger teammates sticking it to their team? You got Michael Busch, Cody Bellinger, and Yancy Almonte going out there and performing. Cody Bellinger hit a home run on the final day. While he did have a couple rough days before that, the home run, the way to end it, felt pretty good. Yancy Almonte, 2 innings, 1 run, but only, or actually none of them were earned. So especially with the way that he ended it on the final day with a 1-2-3 with 2 strikeouts, that's got to feel good for him. And Michael Busch, I mean, if there is a player of the weekend, it was him. First home run as a Cub, gets that 3-run lead right off the bat in the first inning with the 2-out double with the bases loaded. That's got to feel good for Michael Busch. And coming up this week, we have 9 games on the road, starting with the Padres, and it is not going to be easy. This is a rough start to the stretch here of 9 games on the West Coast. First game, you're facing Yu Darvish, Javier Saad against Yu Darvish. Next game, Joe Musgrove against to be determined, most likely going to be Ben Brown again. And then on Wednesday, the getaway game, Kyle Hendricks against Dylan Cease. Woo, man. I mean, that's going to be a stiff competition right there for them. And then, of course, 3 against the Mariners and 3 against the reigning NL champ Diamondbacks. Again, you don't feel good about 3-6 road trip. You feel okay about a 4-5 road trip. You feel really good about a 5-4, maybe even a 6-3 road trip. Either of those three outcomes, 4-5, 5-4, or 6-3, make you feel really good. By this time next week, there will be 6 games that will be completed. So we'll see how these first 6 go. And once again, join me on April 10th. I'm going to be doing a solo live broadcast of the final game against the Padres. Will the Cubs be trying to avoid a sweep, going for a sweep, going for a series win? We'll see. And then the first game of the series with Brennan Miller against the Mariners. That's going to be a fun one. Maybe even seeing some guys that might be a Cub by the end of the season. Who knows? I know there's a lot of pitchers on that team that I would love to have. So bring the popcorn, bring some friends, join us in the live chat. Make sure that you do that because we're going to be giving away live autograph memorabilia. It's going to be a blast. Can't wait to see you there. Go hit those notifications on our YouTube channel. Setup Nation, real Cubs fans out there, cannot wait to see you on Wednesday. Let's go, Cubs, go. Let's get some series wins, and I'm going to go put my arm on ice. We'll see you next time.